Welcome to today's podcast. It's worth considering. Does it seem to you that the Christian life is a bit out of control? Well, if you think so, you're not alone. This short podcast is to help all of us consider the teachings of Christ, even in these confusing times. I am Pastor David, the assistant pastor at Bethel Gilead Community Church, also known as the Church on Block Road. My co-hosts for this discussion are Matthew and Daniel Anderson. We're going to discuss how we must market the gospel. Now, this might seem a bit sacrilegious, or at least unspiritual. Believe me, it is a conversation well worth having. As Christians, we need to meet people where they are at. This includes knowing how God has designed humankind and how best to present the good news of the gospel. We are to be wise as serpents, as the scriptures tell us, but harmless as doves. Hey, well, it is so good to have both of you. We got Daniel Anderson and Matthew Anderson here in today's podcast. We're going to be talking about, I think, a subject that in some ways kind of comes as a taboo for Christians. And that's going to be, how do you market speaking and talking about the gospel? And it's quite interesting. Jesus was really, he led the way when he said to his disciples, go out as you go out, make disciples. And that really is going to require a deliberate approach. And we're going to be talking about the deliberate approach of marketing. And so don't turn off before you turn on as we discuss, and many times business terms, about what it is to market the gospel in a fair and equitable way. And that's why we have Matthew here. Matthew has written a book called Matthew, why don't you tell us about your book?
Yeah, well, it is, the title is First, Fix Your Message. And I really wrote it as a handbook for the types of clients that I work with, who tend to be business owners, senior leaders of larger companies, as well as sales managers, or, you know, chief revenue officers is often the term these days. And it's really a book that tries to explain the fundamental principles of marketing and give them a step-by-step way for figuring out the marketing problems that they do have and understanding the kind of leadership they need to provide to the marketing staff they hire if they want to get good results. So this is really the book that I wish some of my clients would have read before they began working with me, and to be able to equip some of the people who maybe can't afford to hire me to grow to a point where they can. So it's it really describes a somewhat different approach to marketing that I've developed over the last 20 years. And
gotcha.
I'm encouraged that people are finding it helpful.
Oh, very good. Daniel, now you've read this book, haven't you, Daniel?
Yes, I have. And I took down audio excerpts of it and listened to that, half a dozen times. So yeah, I found it to be a fascinating book and very well written. And I teach business classes, so it'll just fit right in there. But then, you and I talking with your investigations of evangelism at the Second Great Awakening and realizing, wow,
oh yes, yeah,
there's an overlap here.
It's huge. And as a matter of fact, when you first approached me with this podcast, so if this thing sinks, it's all your fault. But we started talking, and I'm thinking, wow, this makes a lot of sense. And it makes a lot of sense where I'm at. I'm the assistant pastor at a church, and we have moved forward with our online ministry. And we have a lot of work to do, but how do we market ourselves so that we can reach an audience that, for the most part, is not being reached? And that's going to be in our county. That's really what our focus is that we have about 50,000 people in Branch County, and only about 4% go to church, but many have been churched in times past, and coming to a physical building isn't something that they find to be attractive. So I'm curious, how can we market and help them? So that's going to be pretty interesting.
That's awesome.
As we go down this road together here.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Hey, Matthew.
It's so practical.
It is. And Matthew, one of the things that I've heard, because Dan had sent me some notes, and he sent me some of his audio notes as well, is that you emphasize you have to have an honest approach to what you are doing and that you really believe in what you're doing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that people have become somewhat inured to marketing these days. Depending on the study that you look at, each of us, as we go through every single day, is bombarded with somewhere between 1,000 and 8,000 marketing messages a day. And so, you know, maybe different than 100 years ago when marketing was in its infancy as a professional discipline, we have developed psychological defense mechanisms to tune out things that we think are trying to take advantage of us or that are dishonest and inauthentic. We have a very good antenna for that, and a pretty severe filter to weed those things out. So I do think that one of the ways to be truly effective in your marketing is to actually believe what you're saying and to, you know, make sure that that serves the audience you're trying to reach.
Okay. Boy, I tell you what, I can tell that you and Dan, you are related. You're... Your vocabulary is very good, and it's definitely geared towards, well, your profession and your marketing. So if
his is a lot better than mine. He went to Northwestern University. He also was runners-up as a Rhodes Scholar.
That's why it's hard to understand some of the things he's saying. I thought you were just bad. Okay, so let me put this back in layman's terms here. So,
sure.
In essence, it's a matter of fact, we are bombarded as a people with advertisements. So we become a bit jaded and skeptical anytime we hear something trying to be sold to us. And it's coming from everywhere, from the YouTube feed that we have or Facebook, or when we drive down the road and we see advertisements, to the radio, to the television. We are constantly being bombarded. And how can you make your voice stand out, but at the same time have some authenticity to it? Is that right, or am I missing?
Yeah, no, that's correct. That's definitely an important variable, I think, to succeeding with getting the message that you want to get out and really getting people to tune into it. If you don't believe what you're saying, the odds that you'll be able to communicate it in ways that really resonate with people,
you know, it's interesting,
are pretty low.
Yeah, absolutely. So yesterday I was up in Grand Rapids, right in your neck of the woods there, Dan. Actually, I was only a few miles from your house, and I was going up there to sell a vehicle to somebody, and I was sitting in the DMV, and a lady comes in, and she sits down, and she starts talking to me right away. And I said, wow, this is kind of nice. I have somebody to talk to while I'm waiting. And then from the conversation, we're talking about COVID, and, you know, there's a lot of good things that happened from COVID. The idea they have an appointment. We were there for 20 minutes. That's it. And then I was mentioning that, yeah, I'm an assistant pastor and we're going online and this has really helped us. And that's when, after 5 minutes of the conversation, I put that in and she goes, oh, yeah, well, absolutely, I'm a believer. And what she was doing is that she was prepping my conversation, her conversation that she wanted to have with me about evangelizing in the marketplace. And
wow.
And she had taken classes on how to do that, and she was actually practicing it. And one of the comments she made...
Did she go to Cornerstone?
I don't know where she... I never got to that point. But the interesting piece is that she says, yeah, when we start talking about God in the workplace or wherever we might be, there's a barrier that goes up right away, you know? And how can you prevent that barrier from going up, or how can you help bring that down? And she goes, there's a lot of techniques in which you do it. And Matthew, I remember when I used to work in the car wash industry, we would have salesmen who would come into our warehouse, and I'm going, oh, no. Salesman again. I don't have time for this. Now, of course, it was nice when we got to know them. They brought in donuts. But, you know, this idea, a salesman or evangelist or somebody, a born-again Christian who wants to share their faith, is like, not this again. So does your book help remedy some of that?
Well, yes and no. I would say first and foremost for this audience, it's not a book about evangelism. It's a book about marketing for business people. But a lot of the concepts are relevant. One of the things that really makes marketing an interesting discipline is its job fundamentally is to build a bridge between the ideas and thoughts and feelings that are in your audience's mind and what you have to sell. And the thing that makes that connection is the nature of the message that you're communicating. So that message definitely needs to reflect back or connect with ideas that are already in your audience's mind. But it also has to be true to what you're selling. And the book is really about the attributes of your message that have to be there, the ingredients, if you will, in that recipe that have to be there in order to build that bridge between you and your audience or your customer.
We'll get there. Let's talk about that. But before we do, Daniel, you're involved with the Catholic Church with, is it street evangelism?
Yeah, and by the way, before this podcast, I just want you to let you know I'm all prayed up because I did my St. Joseph Novena and the rosary.
Good. I was hoping you had doubled up on it because I was, it was just, St. Joseph and that was it, I was a little bit concerned.
No, also the rosary.
Good.
No, yeah, hanging around me, he doesn't want to lose his Catholicism.
No, I'm trying not to because he's still, just like you, he's trying to convert me and I feel kind of ganged up on right now.
Well, that's okay. You always love the martyr perspective, so that's good.
Yeah.
So when...
No, but yeah, you're talking, St. Paul Street Evangelization. That's the name of the organization. And yeah, I've taken several other online courses and I've done that with them. And I realized too, we were talking and realizing, oh my gosh, some of what I'm doing, it's like, why not call it marketing? You might think it's gimmicky or something, but the way I'll start it off will be literally like, hey, you want a free rosary? You know what it is? You know how to work it? Well, here's a brochure.
How to work it? Does this baby come with instructions? Be careful. You don't want to blow it up.
Instruction manual included.
Okay. So,
but I mean, like, that's a sales approach,
Well, it is. And this is where, when you had mentioned it, to be honest, I'm thinking, all right, I remember Evangelism Explosion was one thing that was really big and in the 70s, and it took off. And it was very effective, but it was a marketing way of how do you approach people. And then so there are other ones. So I would imagine, having read Matthew's book, you gave him some of the points. We're going to go to those very quickly. But when you read Matthew's and what you're doing with street evangelism, it must like the bells must start of going off. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. I was just reading it and fascinated, and I've been, nagging Matthew and just saying, this is amazing how this relates. And of course, he fully sees that, but I'm wanting to get him to write another book, especially toward evangelism. But of course, I mean, he's a marketing professional and he's got a business to run and he's busy and... But it relates so well. I mean, like, number one, what was so fascinating to begin with, just the relation between psychology and logic. So there is Matthew's main point in the book that I took away is you have to first fix your message. You have to know your message and you have to know your audience and you have to relate that message to the audience. And to understand how people typically are motivated, it is first through, like, psychologically. There has to be this connection, the rapport, the trust. They know your reputation, perhaps. So all these psychological things, because you found what their need is, you've seen how what you can do can meet their need. And, I mean, so there's the psychological, personal motivation toward the gospel. So you know what? It's okay.
Okay, let's
that
say
you have your church has a worship group, and some people could think, oh, but that's manipulating. No, it's simply understanding what it is to be human.
Well, all right, those are really good. Let me hold on to that. Those are really good points because I remember when Evangelism Explosion came upon the scene. Matthew, this is way before you. But the idea was that these techniques are taken away from the work of the Spirit. And a matter of fact, that's what the Second Awakening was really by Finney talking about as well. He says, listen, God's Spirit is always needed. that is a given. And that's why we open today with prayer. But there is how man is made, and there's that psychological place where he does need somebody to help him to build bridges. And our terminology today can be, you know, business oriented. It can be psychologically, you know. There's a lot of speakers right now who are on the Christian scene who are talking about, you know, people's needs. Lauren Peterson, for example, huge. I mean, when you talk about, I listened to him and Dr. Phil today about the psychology of the human's, you know, psyche and how we need to address that, especially in the gospel. So let's take some of these where you're talking about psychology. We would say absolutely God has made us this way. We understand how he's made us. But that is not to say we forsake the Spirit of God, because I don't want to turn off our audience right now who say,
oh, totally.
Okay.
Right.
So let's go down that road. Let's talk about some of the bullet points, Dan, that you had sent me. When we look at the book of Acts, right, and we look at that Great Commission, do you have anything offhand right away that you can point to and say, hey, here's a good starting point?
Well, for one thing, a point he had on page 19 is that we automatically respond to questions and arguments. So this applies to marketing, it applies to evangelism, that we have key questions that we know people are asking. And that when we're asking questions, that's just like a natural trigger that people can't help but responding to. And the same thing with arguments, that we do have arguments. For some people, there are different. Matthew talks about how people are at different stages of receptivity toward marketing, toward your message. So some people, no, they're not going to respond to the cosmological or the ontological argument. Don't go there.
Yeah.
So Matthew, let Matthew explain that for a second, where different people are at different places. Matthew, can you add to that?
Well, yeah. So there's a direct response marketer from the 1960s who named Eugene Schwartz, who really developed this idea of there being different levels of what he calls customer awareness, where you can, you know, one way to segment your audience is to say that, you know, some people are completely unaware. They don't even realize they have a problem. Other people, other customers, they're problem aware. They realize they have a problem. It's bothering them. They want a solution, but they don't know the first thing about the solution. Then there's people who maybe are aware of some solutions, but they're not aware of your product. And, you know, then the next level of awareness is what he calls product aware, which is they may have heard of your product. They may know a few things about it, but they're not ready to buy yet. And then at the, you know, the highest stage of awareness are the people who are most aware. They haven't made a decision yet to purchase, but they are fairly sophisticated. They know about the solution. They know how the solution works. They know how your product incorporates the solution, but they need to be nudged to, you know, make that final decision.
Wow. I tell you,
you
what.
Know, so if you to put it in more layman's terms, you can think about, you know, the unaware person is the, you know, person who has spinach stuck in their teeth. And they don't even realize it, or if they do realize it, they don't know that it's a problem, that it, you know, should be embarrassing. And then, you know, the person who's problem aware realizes they have spinach in their teeth, but they don't know what to do about it. And the solution aware person maybe knows that toothpicks exist, but they've never heard of floss. And, you know, if you're trying to market dental floss, you know, your goal there is to make them product aware and to explain what floss is and why it's great and all of that. And then the person who's product aware maybe knows that dental floss exists, but doesn't know that yours, has this nice mini flavor that also leaves your breath smelling fresh. And so you can see how at each stage of awareness, if you knew that about the person or the audience you're talking to, you would tailor your message differently based on what they need to hear.
Okay, hey, let's stop there for a second, because that I remember reading or hearing Dan read on his notes about the spinach in your teeth and thought, yeah, that is right down at the layman's level. We can all relate to that. So it's a matter of awareness. You being aware of their level of awareness and getting to know. So you got to be listening to what they have to say.
Nice.
So
yes, exactly. And you know, it's a lot easier to figure out someone's level of awareness when you're speaking to them one-on-one. So the challenge from a marketer's perspective is you're speaking to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people at any given time. And so calibrating your message to the level of awareness, you know, poses its own challenges.
Oh, wow. So in one sense, I'm thinking about the church here. It would be helpful to narrow my target audience instead of saying anyone, we're going to give the gospel to everyone. And in one sense, it's thrown a huge net out there, but we have no idea what type of fish we're even, you know, fishing for. Is that true?
Yeah, I like that, the idea of using like Google or Facebook analytics. In your paper, as I understand it, was regarding the use of modern technology too in evangelizing, starting off with like how Finney did in the Second Great Awakening.
What do you mean, Dan? Go ahead and continue
that,
on.
That it's okay. Well, like your role as assistant pastor and with evangelization and wondering what your audience is, because in this case, you're reaching your audience through gifted and talented people like myself and very spiritual people. And with, you know, anyway.
Amen, brother.
But no, you're reaching an audience presently through a modern medium that is obviously right in line with the book of Acts, I think, even though they didn't have Google or Facebook back then. But so you too then would use Google or Facebook analytics, where it tells you where your audience is tuning in from, so that you would know how to tailor your message. Just like what Matthew was saying, when you're sitting down one-on-one, you get a feel for the person and you kind of understand where you want to go and how you'd want to tailor your message. But here you are talking in front of a microphone, not seeing who, and we don't know who's listening, but yet you do get a lot of information to find that out through sophisticated advertising techniques. All I'm aware of is like Google, Facebook analytics, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have more data about our audience than we've ever had before, and it allows us to precisely target messages to, you know, specific groups of people. And there are sophisticated remarketing techniques that you can use to do that that definitely can move the needle from a business perspective. I would say, though, that there's a danger in that, and that is to pander and really water down the message until it loses its power to change people. So the other thing to keep in mind, and this is also important from a marketing perspective, is to think about...
Second, God.
We dropped the call.
Oh, shoot. Oh, we just pick it right back up.
Sorry, I lost you guys. Fortunately, we can...
Yeah, no, I don't know what happened, but we dropped the call somehow.
Yeah.
I'll try to pick up my stream of thought. You know, we were talking about the danger of pandering, and you see this in especially some progressive churches, right? They want to reach out with a gospel that barely resembles the gospel anymore because it reflects every trend in the culture, right? And you sure. Start to fit in instead of stand out. So you don't want to do that. That's one danger. But then the other danger is articulating your message in a way that your audience can never receive it. So you want to try to find that middle ground. And one way to do that is to make sure that there are parts of your message that address each level of customer sophistication. So just because some people in your audience don't even realize they have a problem, well, you probably need, you know, part of your message to help them realize that they have a problem. And, you know, just because you have some people in your audience who are highly sophisticated and who have been familiar with the message of the gospel for years and years and have lived it out and, you know, maybe have memorized large parts of the Bible, those parts of the message that are reiterating why there's a problem and why it's an issue, don't necessarily miss them. If that was all you were saying, you know, they might begin to tune you out. But, you know, having that kind of mental framework of thinking about the different levels of sophistication and awareness in the audience can give you as you're writing your message or you're editing it, can give you just a framework to make sure that you're making it as interesting and impactful as you can be.
Sure.
Now, does that mean, would that mean just like being diversifying for ministries within the church, or do you think even different churches might themselves have different cultures that it's okay that you're reaching and addressing, which means some people of other cultures maybe aren't going to really get that?
Yeah, so I think it's both and. One of the great things about some of these marketing frameworks is that they're very close to human psychology and how humans operate. And so you can apply them in different ways. The first church that I attended down here was much more of a seeker-oriented church, very alive spiritually, very impactful. In fact, their 4th of July party they threw for several days, they counted 1,500 people who made a decision for Christ.
Wow.
And that was definitely an event that was geared towards reaching out to the community with a very authentic gospel message, but it was highly influential. I ended up leaving that church because every sermon was basically the gospel message with a different hook for the first 5 minutes. And at the stage of spiritual development I am, I wanted a little more substance and depth. So the church I'm attending now provides really powerful, insightful teaching. I mean, we're 20 months into about 24 months of just going through verse by verse in Hebrews. That would not be appropriate for that church that I attended earlier.
Thank you for spending time to listen to today's podcast, the first in the series, How We Are to Be Wise as Serpents, but Innocent as Doves. We hope you continue to tune in and don't drop out as we continue with conversations that make a difference in our lives. Until the next time, go out as God's ambassadors, commissioned to a world in desperate need of the gospel. God bless you.